Hello and welcome to Press TV News Analysis. I'm Kaveh Tafwai. Don't buy Iranian oil. In essence, the United States has asked countries around the world to place an oil embargo on themselves. Not that Iran has stood still. It has stopped selling oil to France and the UK, and just today, to Greece. And not all countries are listening, such as 10 countries from Europe and Japan. In this news analysis, we will examine what these U.S.-led sanctions are really all about and whether the U.S. has ulterior motives.
Before I turn to our request, though, I want to report that
the U.S. Treasury Secretary Timothy Geithner has warned of the impact the rising oil prices have had on the ailing U.S. economy. Geithner says Americans can feel the pinch from the soaring prices of oil in their pocketbooks, another alarming note from an American official regarding oil.
Oil prices typically go up to a level of, let's say, $5. Traders argue about whether we're talking 450 or 5, but we're already to an area where it's called demand destruction. And that simply means that people can't afford to buy anymore. They have to find alternative ways to go to work or do anything else. And so it becomes a great burden on changing their lifestyles. But obviously, most people cannot afford to pay just any amount of money for gasoline or fuels.
Crude prices have climbed higher in recent months following Iran's decision to punish some European countries for their oil sanctions against Tehran. In the latest move, Iran stopped selling oil to major Greek firms for defaulting on their payments. As for the record high fuel prices in the U.S., an opinion poll shows Americans are angry with President Barack Obama over the matter. The U.S. tensions with Iran and the rising oil prices have also affected the recovery of the American economy from its worst downturn since the 1930s. Washington's efforts to impose sanctions on Iran's oil sector have so far had little impact on Iranian exports. The Iranian oil ministry says at least $30 billion will be invested in the domestic oil industry this year. Iran is one of the world's biggest producers and exporters of crude oil.
So what are these oil sanctions all about? Let's find out from our guests. Let me introduce them. Political commentator Mark Dankoff joins us from San Antonio. We have American philosopher and political commentator James Fetzer, who joins us from Madison. And last but not least, author and political commentator Kaveh Afrasiabi joins us from Boston. Gentlemen, welcome. Kaveh Afrasiabi, let me start with you. Can you please explain these U.S. sanctions on Iranian oil when even U.S. Treasury Secretary Timothy Geithner has said high oil prices are damaging U.S.'s economy?
Well, obviously the U.S. thinks that it's worth the price, and they are hoping that by exerting such pressures combined with other pressure tactics such as sabotage, cyber warfare, and so on, that they can elicit favorable response from Iran at the negotiation table. And I think that many analysts believe that that's self-delusional, and the U.S. is up for a rude awakening at the upcoming talks, because Iran has already stated that it's not going to halt its uranium enrichment program. So one must look at the ulterior motives behind the U.S.'s coercive strategy toward Iran that has been reflected in attempts, for example, to put bans on import of conventional arms such as attack helicopters to Iran. And of course, the question is why? The answer is that the U.S. is concerned about Iran's rising regional power and is trying to perpetuate its role as a protectorate power for the oil sheikdoms in the Persian Gulf, and is of course concerned about the downfall of pro-U.S. dictators as a result of the Arab Spring. So put all these factors together, and what you have is a bullying U.S. tactic followed by a number of other Western governments that try to contain the Iranian power under the guise of a nuclear standoff.
And not to mention the fragile state of the global economic recovery, most notably Europe, suffering from the Eurozone crisis. Mark Dankoff, isn't this a major hit towards their recovery? I mean, Europe just announced it is going into a second recession.
Yeah, and it's amazing. We might ask ourselves the question as to how long the Europeans and the European people are going to put up with us. I frankly think, as you look at this whole situation, that the most ominous aspect of it is the historical perspective that we might gain on what's happening here. If we look at President Herbert Hoover's book, just released, by the way, right around the 70th anniversary of Pearl Harbor, it's edited by historian George Nash, and it's entitled President Herbert Hoover on the History of the Second World War and Its Aftermath. There's a 50-page section of that book that talks about the inside story of what Franklin Delano Roosevelt and Henry Stimson, his Secretary of War, and Mr. Roosevelt's State Department were doing to virtually ensure that a war with Japan, that it was totally preventable, would in fact occur. And if one takes a look at what the United States, as revealed in President Hoover's book, was doing under Franklin Roosevelt, especially from July the 18th, 1941, all the way through the end of September, it becomes abundantly clear that the Roosevelt administration was bent on having a war with Japan at virtually any price. There was nothing that the Japanese could have agreed to, and which in fact they did agree to, that did not result in a new set of conditions on the part of the U.S. The same thing is now happening in this tragedy that's unfolding with Iran. The United States wants this war, chiefly because Israel and Netanyahu want this war. The Gulf Cooperation Council states want this war. And the international central bankers who love fiat banking and fractional reserve banking will profit by the debt that will be generated by this war on all sides. This is a terrible situation. It's something that the American public should not support, that the European public should not support, and that should generate absolute worldwide protest before it happens. And yet the passivity of the American public on this up to now absolutely amazes me.
Well, James Fetzer, still not convinced overall, trying to figure out these sanctions. We should look at an argument that's made in terms of the U.S. And, of course, going back into history, the U.S. is immune from these sanctions because, well, it has not bought Iranian oil for 30 years. Since the Islamic Revolution. But this is not the case for Europe and the rest of the world. So how is it that they're continuing to agree to it, even though all have not?
Well, the situation is quite bizarre. Just as Mark Dankoff has observed, John Stennett in his book, Day of Deceit, confirmed that the then Roosevelt administration took provocative moves that would be guaranteed to invite a Japanese attack on Pearl Harbor, which they knew was coming. The concern about nuclear weapons in Iran is just as justifiable as the concern about weapons of mass destruction in Iraq. It appears that we have had successive administrations that are performing one deceitful act, one lie after another. It turns out that new research has revealed that the four crash sites on 9/11 were all fabrications. Pilots for 9/11 Truth, for example, has discovered that Flight 93 was over Champaign-Urbana, Illinois, at the same time it was supposed to have been crashing in Shanksville, and that Flight 175 was over Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, at the same time it was allegedly effortlessly entering the South Tower. The whole thing was a sham with Hollywood-style special effects. I have published four articles revealing this, the most important of which is entitled Planes, No Planes, and Video Fakery. We're getting nothing but one lie after another to manage the emotions and attitudes of the American people to support unjustifiable wars of aggression against Iraq and now in Afghanistan and now potentially Iran. It is a disgrace.
Well, you mentioned the Iran's nuclear issue and, of course, the problem that the West has. With that, Kafa Avrasiabi, there was a meeting with foreign ministers of the Persian Gulf Arab countries, Saudi Arabia, Kuwait, Bahrain, Qatar, and the UAE, and Oman. U.S. Secretary of State Hillary Clinton signaled the desire of the U.S. government to work closely with these countries. Now, everybody knows about the human rights and democracy in these countries, but they are very close allies of the U.S., and they are spared of any criticism. So is it really about Iran's pursuit of nuclear energy, about human rights or democracy, or is it Iran's refusal to be a yes man of the U.S.?
Well, obviously there's a great deal of hypocrisy and double standard observable on the U.S.'s part, particularly with respect to the gross violation of human rights in both Bahrain and Yemen. And yet, you know, the U.S.'s focus is exclusively on Syria, and not on those countries for obvious reasons. I think that, you know, as I said before, the U.S. has ulterior motive, is not really interested in resolving the nuclear standoff. That is why it's not proposing anything realistic that's acceptable or potentially acceptable by Iran, and is, you know, making extra legal demands well beyond the purview of international law and the framework of the IAEA and its agreement, safeguard agreement with Iran. And these are designed to torpedo any decent chances for a successful resolution of the nuclear standoff. And, you know, on the security side of it, of course, the U.S. wants to perpetuates hegemony in the Persian Gulf region and to make sure that the oil states, the Arab oil states of the GCC, continue to be security dependent on the U.S. under the guise of the Iranian nuclear and missile threat. Iran, of course, has produced and offered a program for collective security of all the littoral states of the Persian Gulf participating together to ensure collective security in the region. And for obvious reasons, the U.S. and some of its allies have rejected it because they do not want Iran to, you know, be a participant in the security arrangements and to be viewed as a stabilizer, because they perpetuate this negative stereotype image of Iran as a source of instability for their own vested interests.
Exactly. Well, Kaveh Afrasiabi, you mentioned ulterior motives a number of times, and I'd like to go with that notion with you, Mark Dankoff, because there's some analysis being made that, you know what, the U.S. is noticing, obviously, how these emerging economies such as China and India are coming into play. Is there a chance that by this U.S.-led sanction on Iranian oil, they want to stop or hinder the growth of, for example, these two economies?
I don't think there's any question about it, and I think this had a great deal to do with the NATO intervention in Libya, where in the eastern part of that country you had oil fields and oil assets that had come to terms with communist China in terms of selling oil to them and engaging in long-term contracts with them. The same thing holds true, I think, for Iran. When you look at the Chinese, when you look at the Indians, for example, just to name those two in particular, their situation with Iran in regard to business arrangements with the Iranian regime are designed to mutually benefit both. The United States, it would seem to me, has an interest in undermining that, or at least its multinational corporations, its central bankers, and its Israeli lobby have an interest in undermining that. And so, in essence, what is happening here is that a non-existent Iranian weaponized nuclear program is being heightened in terms of the American media, our own national intelligence estimates, and the International Atomic Energy Agency opinion on this notwithstanding. This is in order, I think, not simply to destroy arrangements that Iran might be making with countries like China and India as it regards oil, but clearly the Israelis have a vested interest in continuing to destroy the hegemony of countries that are not singing Netanyahu's tune every 5 minutes. The other aspect of this is that the Iranians have made it very clear that at one point they'd like to begin doing business in terms of oil sales in something other than the American dollar. The whole threat that is posed by this to the status of the American dollar as the reserve currency of the world also has something to do, I think, with why these military preparations are underway. It's a very insidious situation, and I think Dr. Jim Fetzer has stated it exactly correctly. It's a disgrace. It's an outrage. Innocent people on both sides of this problem are going to perish, and perish at the behest of the usual players, the international bankers, the Israeli lobby, and the oil and natural gas consortiums. And you can take that one to the bank.
Well, James Fetzer, not everybody is listening. You have 10 countries from Europe, not to mention Japan, and South Korea is in the pipeline in terms of exemptions that they have gotten from the U.S. Prior to that, it seemed like the U.S. was pretty much having this line of, you listen or else. So what happened? Does this mean that these U.S.-led oil sanctions are actually falling apart and doomed to fail?
I believe that U.S. influence in the world is on the wane, and these are desperate last gasps to reassert American supremacy. Mark Dankoff has it right. When Iraq went off of the petrodollar, it was attacked. When Libya went off the petrodollar, it was attacked. Now that Iran has introduced an international bourse to trade in different currencies, we find it is in our sights for attack. But it's not only the international community that is not being responsive to the American government. There are disturbing signs that the American government is planning military and paramilitary actions against the American people. They are requisitioning personnel to maintain these concentration camps, these FEMA camps distributed around the country. They have requisitioned 30,000 drones to spy on the American people. These actions are clearly unjustifiable. There's no possible basis for it. And now the Department of Homeland Security has requisitioned 450 million rounds of 40 caliber ammunition. That's more than a bullet for every man, woman, and child in the United States. This ammunition, by the way, is hollow point. It's designed to maim and to kill. It's even banned for the use of warfare under the Geneva Conventions. Something extraordinary is going on here in the United States, and I am very sorry to say, as a former Marine Corps officer, that the American people may have to brace themselves for guerrilla war against their own government.
Interesting point. Let's go back to the economic part of this, Kaveh Afrasiabi. The BRICS nations recently had a meeting, and they not only wanted to have their own bank, not to rely on the IMF or the World Bank, but they also said that they wanted not to have the currency pegged to the dollar. Are we at a crossroads when we're seeing the BRIC nations come out with this type of a statement? And of course, what I mentioned about how the U.S. perhaps as an ulterior motive may want to stop India and China as an emerging economy globally.
Definitely. And I think that we are witnessing a whole set of very fluid and dynamic changes in the world economy, some of which are not to the U.S.'s liking. And, you know, with respect to China and its energy insecurity, of course, the Iranian crisis represents a menace to them, and it's in the U.S.'s interest to deepen China's insecurity, as a result of which it can have a better bargaining position against them. And the Chinese know that, and that's why they've come out very strongly against the U.S. sanctions and said that they're not going to be bullied by such unilateral actions. You know, Iran is not the only country that has introduced a basket of using a variety of currencies for its oil transactions. Other countries are also following suit, and this is, of course, you know, a threat to the U.S. dollar. And I don't think the trend is reversible, no matter what. And you know, there's a desperate attempt to maintain the dollar's sway and hegemony, but we're in a changing time, and that's reflective of the declining U.S. global power. Let me just add my own personal opinion that, unlike some other commentators, I don't rank the threat of military action against Iran very high because of its risk to oil flow, as well as the health of the global economy. And what we should be more concerned is about this blatant economic warfare that has been waged against Iran, and justifiably in defiance of international law. And I refer the viewers to my argument on the website of Carnegie with respect to the rule of international law and the lack of legal justification for sanctions on Iran, because even when the IAEA sent Iran's file to the United Nations, it did not do so by citing those provisions that would call Iran in material breach of its obligations. And that's a very delicate yet important point. And Iran is in good standing with the IAEA. There are prospects for even more enhanced cooperation in the resolution of the minor ambiguous issues. And therefore, you know, that is the main issue, the framework for understanding of Iran's nuclear program that the 5+1 nations need to look at and take to the meetings with them.
Okay. Mark Dankoff, I don't know what the gas price is, the price of gas is at the pumps where you're at, but obviously it's been increasing. But now we try to round up everything. It seems like what these leaders are doing, including the United States, is that they're sacrificing their own people for their strategy against Iran. And it's not Iran, as they are portraying it, to be the one that is threatening their livelihoods. Do you agree with that?
Yes, I do. And I think it's important to underscore what Dr. Jim Fetzer has been talking about here. Whether we're talking about the American monolithic support, the American government's monolithic support for the Israeli regime, whether we're talking about the fact that American economic and political institutions are owned lock, stock, and barrel by multinational corporate interests and by central bankers who could care less about the average American, or whether we're looking at the domestic police state that Dr. Jim Fetzer has quite correctly underscored is being developed in this country as of the last 10 years, where whether it's warrantless wiretapping or it's profiling legitimate and honest and peace-loving American citizens like Dr. Jim Fetzer, Mark Dankoff and Mark Glenn of The Ugly Truth, Michael Collins Piper, the American Free Press, and others, or whether we're talking about a situation where the posse comitatus laws in this country are going to be eliminated so that the American military can begin to turn its guns on the American people itself in the enforcement of some of these outrageous policies. It is an absolutely draconian picture that is developing here. And the great paradox is this. More and more Americans need to understand that their enemies are not the Iranian government. Their enemies are not the Iranian people. Their enemies are not the other peace-loving countries and peace-loving peoples of the world who are sick of this new world order. The interest of the average American citizen is in getting his own economy back, getting his community back, getting his constitution back, getting the old American republic back, and disenfranchising and getting rid of the interests that are destroying this country as well as those who threaten to destroy the Iranian country.
And James Fetzer, any chance of that happening, what Mark Dankoff just said? In 2 minutes or less, please.
Well, I believe we're going to see increasing influence in an alliance between Iran, Russia, and China. I believe the American dollar is going to wane, but that the American government is not going to go easily. And those concerns Mark Dankoff was underlining are bona fide and legitimate. If the American people are reduced to fighting a guerrilla warfare against their own government, it's going to be messy, very costly in lives and human sacrifice. But this kind of tyranny must not be allowed to prevail.
Okay, thank you very much. Let me thank our guest, political commentator from San Antonio, Mark Dankoff. Thank you, American philosopher and political commentator, Dr. James Fetzer from Madison. We appreciate your comments. And author and political commentator, Kaveh Afrasiabi, from Boston, thank you. And thank you, the viewer, for watching another edition of the Press TV News Analysis. Newsroom at PressTV.ir for any comments or suggestions. From Mikava Tafoy and the entire team here from the capital, Tehran, it's goodbye.